From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 20th day of February 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Jonathan Kappas will be here to explore what's been happening in Washington, D.C. as related to the Farm Bill. And in fact, there has been quite a bit of news, though it's been fairly quiet. We'll discuss with him what the impact may be as we move forward. And we'll also take a look at the agricultural energies and the agricultural weather segments. We'll do that with Don Day and Dave Chatterton. We'll do it all right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Oh, and I'll remind you to pick up your tickets right now. Don't wait. Don't delay. Don't tarry. Do it today. For the All-Day Ag Outlook, it's online at willag.org. Cost is $30. The All-Day Ag Outlook is Tuesday, the 6th day of March, not very far away.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, to take a look at what happened at Chicago at the CME Group. Hey, Wayne, thanks for being with us.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. Yeah, I knew you were talking about all the rain that way. I guess some of the Northern Illinois Barge River plants have closed for the afternoon because of the rising waters, and also the wind and stuff is doing stuff. So they've closed some of their places for the day that way just because of the rising water.
Yeah, so there's some interesting things happening in the weather here. Argentina remains dry. I think the outlook looks fairly dry. And that pushed on this first trading day after the holiday weekend. Futures pretty well, at least in the soybeans overnight and the morning hours. And then what happened?
Well, I think we went up and touched actually some new highs in the November beans up there, and we backed off a little bit. We're seeing that, maybe a little chance for some moisture somewhere along the way. But the idea is that, Brazil is going to make up for a lot of the shortfalls that are happening there. The big question, of course, is the bean meal because of the processing capacity and Argentina not keeping up with what they've been going out there. But I think that just a few people were willing to say, hey, this has been quite a rally, and they're going to take some profits off the table. And there was also quite a bit of farmers selling. There was two or three of the advisory firms that actually kicked in and done their first 20% of new crop bean sales today.
You think that's a good idea?
Well, I think as long as it was your first 20%, I think these were the levels we've been looking for. We've been sitting back here saying, somewhere in that 10.25 to 10.30 bracket that we wanted to put some on, and I don't think that's such a bad idea. You know, the funds have turned around. They are long in doing this, but you never know what can happen here along the way if the weather would change. But it does look, if I was in Argentina now, I'd be very bullish because it's very dry.
USDA putting out its forecast for the next 10 years in preparation for the Ag Forum, which is Thursday and Friday this week. By the way, you can watch some of that online, and right now at willag.org, there is a link from YouTube, so you can watch part of it if you just go there. That's later in the week. Their long-term forecast says that the farm price for soybeans for the coming soybean growing season will be $9.40, with an ending stocks by the time we get to the fall of 19 at $376 million. That's down, but still not a very high price for soybeans.
No, I mean, you look where we're at now here today, the November beans trading at about 10.25, and that's 9.40, so that's 85 cents less.
Do you think that what's happening in Argentina will translate for very long into the marketplace?
Well, I think it's going to depend on how we can somewhat react. Can the U.S. and Brazil make up for some of the crushing? Will we actually see China buy some beans, and they've got excess crushing capacity, and actually sort of fill into that Vietnamese market along with it? And I think if we would start to see some of that, why it could be a shorter-lived rally than what some people are hoping for.
Yeah, so the corn wasn't very happy to go along with soybeans, but they managed to trail it just a bit for a while today. They ended up finishing lower, though.
Yeah, and I think that just as you were talking about those other big numbers here, the government is still talking about leaving the carryout still very big. And I think that, they still believe that farmers are going to plant more corn acres, even though they say that some say more money could be made on beans this year. But I think it's just what's hanging over the market here in the total bushels, along with the wheat being a feed item also. We had some corn starting to go into China. It seems like that's backed off a little bit with some of our other trade ideas, that the tariffs on the aluminum and iron along the way. And we were hoping for a little better there. But, you know, as we looked at the export shipments from last week, they were within the range of what was expected, but there was a great fall off compared to the last 3 weeks, and we were really looking for that to keep growing to get our corn back in shape as far as the carryout would change.
Now, USDA on its projections today put the average farm price for corn at $3.30 for the 18-19 year, ending stocks at 2.607 billion, and they leave them there all the way out, roughly speaking, around that 2.6 through 2027. Though I have to admit, we knew what the acreage numbers they would be using might be, and they did leave them in the supply and demand tables. Those were released late last year. So that's off a 91 million corn crop and a 91 million planted acre soybean crop as well. And I don't know whether many of the trade thinks that that's really going to be the case, and we'll find out later in March, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, there's the thought that they may even try to be buying corn acres down the road, because some guys are trying to take the carryout under 2 billion bushels. So, you know, there's a lot to be seen or worked through on that, but that's an awful big number to hang out there and never get down below it. It sort of makes it like there's always going to be a pretty good supply and not a real reason for a big rally.
Hey, thanks so much. We look forward to talking with you again next week and having you over at the Beef House in a little less than a couple of weeks now.
That's right. We're going to have a lot of fun.
Yep, indeed. Hey, thanks so much, Wayne.
Thank you.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, and will join us at the All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, Tuesday, the 6th day of March. For $30, you can too. We start at 8 a.m. Central Time, go through about 2 in the afternoon. The tickets are just, again, $30. Buy them online at willag.org or at 800-898-1065. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You know, the current Farm Bill expires this year, and Congress is expected to take it up and to try to make some changes to it over the next 12-month period. However, they've begun, not frankly with the Farm Bill, but in some other areas. Jonathan Kappas is here now. He's an agricultural policy specialist from the U of I. Why don't you tell me a little bit about what's been happening over the last couple of weeks?
Sure. I mean, it's actually been a sort of almost ironically quiet but busy stretch in the last month or so in Farm Bill reauthorization perspective. The biggest thing that's happened is the House and Senate Ag Committees negotiated out some provisions that were included in that bipartisan budget deal that passed Congress just right at the beginning of the month here in February. And included in that deal was were two major programmatic changes in the farm program side of the Farm Bill, and some pretty big changes in crop insurance for dairy and for cotton in particular.
Let's detail some of those. First, let's start with cotton. What happened there?
Well, so just, you know, quick background, cotton base acres. So the payment programs are all made on base acres, which are historic acres at USDA, on record at USDA. Because previous cotton supports had gotten in trouble with the World Trade Organization and we'd lost a dispute with Brazil that dated back to late 90s, early 2000s. But because of that, in the 2014 Farm Bill, the cotton base acres were taken out of the program, so you could not receive payments for cotton on cotton base acres. And that was to settle that dispute with Brazil. And so that was a pretty big and contentious issue in the last Farm Bill debate. And since then, the cotton industry has been looking for a way to bring those base acres back into the program and receive payments from a cotton-specific program on the base acres. So the provisions for cotton in this bipartisan budget deal open up the Farm Bill, the 2014 Farm Bill, and in the definitions of what commodities are covered, it created a brand new covered commodity. And this new covered commodity is called seed cotton, which is a combination of cotton lint and cotton seed as it's harvested in the ground or harvested from the plant. And so basically it designed a reference price for the price loss coverage program that would pay out if market year average prices are below it, as well as making it eligible for the ARC program. But I don't think anybody thinks they were looking for the ARC program for cotton. And it uses then a combined calculation. It's a little confusing as between the Lent cotton price and the seed and the cotton seed price to get to seed cotton, and it creates a yield and then obviously the ability to reallocate base acres into the program under that seed cotton provision. So that largely addresses, as far as we can tell, addresses what the cotton industry is looking for since the last farm bill, since they were removed because of the WTO case. And I guess it remains to be seen if they'll look for anything further in the next or in this current reauthorization debate.
The dairy guys ended up with something too.
So the dairy guys, the dairy industry had been seeking a fix. So the 2014 Farm Bill created a new dairy program. It's called the Margin Protection Program. So it operates on a calculated difference between the all milk price and the and a feed cost. That's essentially a calculated feed cost using the price of corn and soybeans and hay. And they had been really unhappy with that program in operation. You bought different levels of buy-up. It looked kind of like an insurance product, but it was not. And there was a lot of frustration with how that program was operating. And so they made some, I guess, technical-type changes to the program. They didn't rewrite it completely, but they changed the way you calculate the margin. Instead of every 2 months, it's calculated every month. You know, dairy is a very different crop, obviously, or a very different commodity given the way production works. And it also changed the premium schedule. So, and this is a pretty tried and true method to get farmers to, or really anybody, I mean, from health insurance to crop insurance, the idea is lowering premiums typically increases participation in an insurance program. And so the idea was that by reducing the premium cost to the farmer for this margin coverage, this Title I margin program, they would get better participation. And then obviously with better participation, you're going to see better risk management for some of the price challenges that, that the dairy industry has. So that was the one fix. The other big fix was in the crop insurance, where they allowed the there's long been a cap on the amount of money that can be spent for livestock insurance, which USDA includes dairy in that, even though there's the difference between the cow and the commodity of the dairy commodity itself. But they were under the livestock cap, and so they so this budget deal removed the cap, which allows the development of full insurance products for dairy, as well as livestock loss insurance policies. So this kind of expands crop insurance, which would expect to expand the amount of premium support that the federal government provides on those livestock and on the dairy commodity.
Did I see one other thing from crop insurance that they lowered the total cap on the AGI from 990?
Well, that was in the president's budget.
That
proposal.
Was in the president's.
Yeah, there's
budget.
No AGI cap on crop insurance right now, but it's been in the. So that was the other sort of item that got a little bit of attention was the. The administration proposed its budget for the coming year, and in that budget, they have a series of farm bill or proposals for the farm bill, things they'd like to see that would reduce spending in Title I, in conservation, crop insurance, and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program or the old food stamp program.
Yeah, all were cuts.
They were all cuts, some of them quite significant. The most significant, of course, was the SNAP program. I've seen estimates that was roughly expected. They're expecting over $200 billion in savings from that program. The sort of the biggest highlight was they were proposing some revision of the program that instead of the benefit, the monthly dollar amount benefit that low-income families use to purchase food, this would somehow create a what they called a harvest box, which would be shelf stable, you know, pasta and canned food items that would be selected for these families and shipped to them somehow. A lot of the details I think are unknown at this point, but it certainly raised a lot of concerns from the food assistance interests that are concerned with how this would operate to, I think, just a lot of good government questions about how any agency would handle this and what it might mean. But you had about, on top of that, you had about $13 billion or so in cuts to the conservation title, which would be a concern. And then a few more, few billion cut out of Title I. And then a pretty significant, I want to think above $20-some billion from crop insurance, largely those savings came from reducing premium assistance across the board. So they were looking at a pretty big, somewhere between 10 and 15 point reduction in the amount of premium assistance farmers receive from USDA.
2 points, I think. Usually presidents budget, DOA are dead on arrival. And second, presidents don't write the budget, Congress does.
So, two very related items, right? The Congress, their prerogative to write a budget, to determine spending levels, all of that through the budget and appropriations process. So usually the president's budget is kind of two different things, right? It is the sort of nuts and bolts of federal operations. So salaries and expenses, leasing costs and operational expenses by the agencies, right? And that's usually what the appropriators then use to fill out the allocations for the agencies. And then the second sort of part of a president's budget are these proposals, these policy initiatives and proposals, much like we just talked about with SNAP and crop insurance, where the president and the administration will come out with things that they want to see changed. And, you know, typically these will involve savings and things like that. So the first part of that is usually used by the appropriators to develop the annual appropriations bill. The second part is usually ignored because that's a prerogative of Congress, and it's kind of it's become very routine that presidential policy suggestions in a budget document are ignored. I'd say this one has even less likelihood of being taken too seriously because of this bipartisan budget deal, which came out the day before, or the week before, I guess it was. So that kind of offsets some of the proposals the president made as far as a farm bill set of issues.
Hey, thanks so much.
You bet. Always good to talk to you, Todd.
Jonathan Kappas, of course, is an agricultural policy specialist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Time to check on this Tuesday with Dave Chatterton at the Powerline Group from right here in Champaign to see what has been happening in the energy sector. Hey, Dave, thanks so much for being with us. It was about a month ago when we talked last. Have there been many changes?
Hey, Todd, thanks for having me. Yeah, actually, it's been a pretty active market here, and things have changed considerably since we spoke several weeks ago. Actually, I think after last time we talked, the market ended up, for the fuel side anyway, topping out, you know, just a few days or less than a week after we spoke, and we've had a nice tumble. I mean, if you look at where heating oil prices are, we've fallen roughly, you know, 35 cents a gallon or about 16-17% from that peak back in mid-February to where we bottomed out, or excuse me, the peak back in late January to the bottom that we had just last week. Now, last week the market did put in a nice rally, and we've seen that followed up on to start this week, and it's jumped another 12-13 cents in diesel fuel off of that bottom. But certainly the landscape has changed a little bit. A lot of that has to do with OPEC and the rhetoric that they talk about. They're now, I guess, near the finish line, if you will, of their original agreement or their goal of trying to get the global oil markets balanced toward the five-year inventory levels. We're pretty close to that, depending on whose metrics you want to look at. But now they're shifting those goals, as we would expect, and trying to keep these cuts in place and putting a little bit of an interim floor here in the marketplace, at least.
What does that give you in terms of prospects for producers, farmers, end users, and how they might approach their needs for this growing season?
Well, certainly with diesel fuel, I think you need to be looking down here. Not necessary, I think, to rush in and just get everything you need covered right here. But with this kind of a break, we've seen the fund positions come down. We've seen a lot of things in the market that have reflected some discounting in the market. And I think it's smart to have a little bit of stuff booked here, particularly for spring, if not starting into your fall usage for diesel fuel. Certainly the market could go lower depending on the circumstances over the summer and the things that we can anticipate. But it appears that OPEC is here to stay and very convinced that they want to continue to kind of keep their foot on the pedal of the marketplace. So unless we're making the argument that, hey, we're going to see a huge economic, you know, slowdown and things globally are going to, you know, we're going to stop burning this amount of diesel fuel, our U.S. production continues to be good, but so do our U.S. exports. I think it's a good balancing point to have at least maybe 50% of your spring needs and probably 25 to 40% of your fall needs booked on, you know, days that we can see weak markets, or if we happen to catch a little bit of a correction lower here in the next week or two.
Any other suggestions?
Well, propane has also been pretty interesting here. Propane prices have fallen kind of late in the winter here. Two primary factors, I think, behind that. One is is just rising propane production, as we've seen U.S. crude oil production increase and natural gas production increase, both of those at record levels domestically. We've also seen propane production come up, and what we've seen in conjunction with that is that the export programs have finally slowed down a little bit. Conway spot prices for propane, which are the hub that we would reference off of here in the Midwest, spot prices are around 70 cents now, and they peaked out, you know, close to almost just under a dollar here just after the first of the year. So that's been a nice correction there. Stocks are still running about 14 to 15% below where they were a year ago, but having that softness in our export market, it's something that we certainly want to keep an eye on going forward. I'm not necessarily interested in covering fall drying needs or summer irrigation needs at this point, but I do think it's something that you'll want to monitor. And if this market continues to show a little bit of weakness, particularly while we're in a stocks deficit, we're going to get to that point sooner rather than later.
Okay, Dave, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That, of course, is Dave Chatterton. He is with the Powerline Group right here in Champaign, Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Tuesday afternoon. Don't forget to buy your tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook. It's the 6th day of March, not very far away, and we'll have a whole lot to discuss on that day. We'll have more than a dozen of our analysts on hand, and we'll take up the weather. We'll look at dicamba and some of the changes that have been taking place both in Washington, D.C. and Chicago. Tickets are just $30. You can buy them online at willag.org, willag.org. Now let's take up the weather forecast with Don Day. He's at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hey, thanks, Don, for being with us today.
Good to see you.
Tell me a little bit about Argentina. Weekend rainfall, maybe, and then what the next 10 days looks like.
Oh, yeah. It's been really touch and go, as we know, with Argentina this growing season. And it's going to be basically more of the same. The better rains, at least here in the short term, are going to stay in the western and northwest areas of Argentina, especially in the mountain areas, having a hard time reaching the growing areas. Now, late in the weekend and early next week, we do see some rains getting into some of those northern and western areas, as well as the far northeast areas of Argentina. But relative to normal, if you add up the rainfall, it's still going to be drier than normal over most areas. So while there is a little bit of rain in the forecast, keyword there is a little. I don't know if it'll be enough to help or not.
Farmers in Brazil, especially the Northern Arc, have been hard at it trying to harvest the crops. What kind of conditions are they working in?
Well, they'll have to dodge some raindrops. It's a pretty active weather pattern in Brazil, except in the far southern areas, but even those areas will be susceptible to some rain. There may be enough rain to cause a few delays, especially in those northern areas.
Tell me about the weather forecast here. Boy, we have been pummeled for the last couple of days from this part of the world on to the east.
Yeah, I tell you, and there's more coming, especially the weather that we have in the Midwest now is going to be drifting eastward slowly, getting into the southeastern Corn Belt, into the southern and eastern areas of the Ohio Valley. There's a lot of activity between just a huge, massive high-pressure ridge just off the east coast and a big, very cold trough off the west coast. And in between those troughs and those ridges, we've got a lot of rain, ice, snow, and crazy weather, and that's going to continue. There's going to be some areas of the southern and southwest Corn Belt that will have as much as 4 inches of water or more out of this before it's all said and done between now and the weekend.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
That, of course, is Don Day. He is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming.